Rumors come in various forms, from those who say they want to change the world to those who simply want to chase the next cold drink on a warm beach. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. And on this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I will discuss three movies that explore what it means to follow a personal dream. The Inventor, out for blood in Silicon Valley, tells the true story of Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes. The Hummingbird Project is a narrative look at a duo that dreams of making a financial killing. And The Beach Bum is Harmony Korine's study of exactly what his film's title describes. So don't touch that dial, because a dreamy edition of Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
Subscribe to your favorite public radio programs when you become a Spokane Public Radio sustainer, just like any news or entertainment service you use. But unlike those other services, you decide how much you want to pay. Set up an electronic fund transfer, and monthly installments will be withdrawn automatically from your account. Plus, you can start or stop your subscription anytime you want. As a sustainer, you help make your public radio station strong. You support your favorite programs. You're entered into all the monthly membership drawings, and you never have to wonder when to renew. You are a part of the community that sustains public radio. Call 1-800-328-5729 during business hours, or go online to SpokanePublicRadio.org. Click the red donate button and start the process. Working together, we make our community a better place to work, to play, and to listen.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbinder, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that dreams of nothing more than a quiet theater, a comfortable reclining seat, and a quality film to see. Ah, but what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil. Sorry, my liberal arts degree is showing. Anyway, dreams, and the various ways in which we envision them, are at the heart of the three films that the three of us will be discussing this week. The first is The Inventor, out for blood in Silicon Valley, Alex Gibney's HBO documentary about Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes. Next is The Hummingbird Project, which stars Jesse Eisenberg and Alexander Skarsgård as a couple of guys who embark on a finance-based project that promises big rewards. And finally, we have Harmony Korine's The Beach Bum, which features Matthew McConaughey in a role he was born to play. Let's start with a real-life dreamer of the scammer type. Alex Gibney's documentary, The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley, is fundamentally similar to another couple of documentaries that we reviewed in February, both of which concern the entrepreneur-slash-scam artist Billy McFarlane and his disastrous fire festival. Gibney, whose past work includes his look at Scientology going clear and the war in Afghanistan, Taxi to the Dark Side, gives us an intimate portrait of Elizabeth Holmes, the founder of Theranos, a company that, she claimed, now proven falsely, had developed technology that could run hundreds of tests from a couple of drops of blood from a pinprick from your finger. Using archival footage, a lot of which is filmed inside Theranos itself, and interviews with a number of former Theranos employees, among others, Gibney convincingly shows that Holmes's claims were as fake as the resonant voice that she affects.
Of course, a documentary film such as this is exactly what I love to see and talk about. But before I begin talking about the Gibney film, I do want to bring to people's attention that a couple of weeks ago, there was a two-hour 2020 episode called The Dropout, which was also focused on Elizabeth Holmes. And I think, much like the Fyre Festival documentaries that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think the Alex Gibney doc that we're going to talk about and the 2020 episode are perfect companion pieces, because in some respects, 2020 got some former employees who really added a lot to the tale of woe that developed with respect to Theranos. I've been fascinated by the story. I'm always fascinated by cults and charismatic figures and no references to current events, just putting it out there. And I think that the Gibney documentary does some things very well. I grew a little tired of some of the filmmaking style, and we'll talk about that just a little bit.
Drone shot.
Well, I think that one of the problems that I had with this particular film was we saw Elizabeth Holmes for like probably a good 60% of the film, oftentimes in close-up. And I think that maybe we were supposed to understand more fully how she could have bamboozled, for example, some of the most illustrious statesmen of our times. And I put the emphasis on man because I do think, you know, and as a feminist, it's difficult for me to talk about this, but I think that who she was, how she presented, and to some extent, how she looked, not necessarily her base of knowledge, was integral in her being able to get all these people to buy into this vision. The science was never there. And even the one person who talks on the screen, who's a physician, talks about the inventor, which, of course, that name is ironic. I think she invented a box to be used, nothing having to do with medical technology, our Elizabeth Holmes. But the doctor who talks about this says that this was not going to be possible under any circumstances. But yet, Walgreens bought in, Henry Kissinger bought in,
George Shultz bought in,
all these people.
Errol Morris bought in.
Loved her vision.
I knew you'd want to talk
about Errol Morris and the inventor because he actually does these PR pieces for her, and you could tell that he was fascinated by her as well.
Gibney quotes him. He lets him quote him as saying, I'm a fan.
Well, and a lot of the footage, I think, that the footage you talk about where Holmes is in close-up, I believe is actually the footage that Errol Morris shot of her integrated into this movie.
Yeah. So I think that it's a fascinating subject, of course, which is the number one rule for a documentary, as we know. I would have appreciated a few more interviews, a bit more context. He relies on maybe four people to tell the backstory, and that's why I thought the 2020 piece was better in some ways. But fascinating story, very similar to other things that we've seen, whether it be Bernie Madoff or the Fire Festival, Billy McFarland, et cetera, et cetera. So I would definitely encourage people to watch this. I'm not sure it's Gibney's best effort, but I'll leave that to you, Nathan, because you always have perspective on that.
Well, this, I think, has a lot in common with Gibney's movie about Lance Armstrong, The Armstrong Lie. And so I found it somewhat ironic that he, in a way, rakes Errol Morris over the coals, kind of shows him as just another old man that was duped by this woman who had nothing going on but managed to bewitch all of these men. And I was thinking, well, isn't Alex Gibney the guy that was hired to make that PR video for Lance Armstrong, who was just as much of a liar as Elizabeth Holmes was, and then realized halfway through that he'd been duped? So I thought there was kind of a double standard there. But
it goes back to the Joe McGinnis thing in terms of, and that Janet Malcolm in The New Yorker called him out for baiting and switching Jeffrey McDonald when he was writing the book about his trial and so forth.
Right.
So I think if you switch roles at some point, maybe you have a heightened obligation to...
Yeah, there are some journalists in this film that write for really prestigious publications that were also duped. I mean, there was this somewhat fawning New Yorker piece, and they talked to
Ken Auletta.
They talked to him. But he even says in the piece that the way that she describes her company is comically vague. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the Wall Street Journal dug into it that they realized the emperor really did have no clothes.
Right.
So I admire the fact that there are journalists in this movie that do come out and say, I admit I was wrong.
And I
should have seen this sooner. So tribute to them. I also like the fact that when Elizabeth Holmes wanted to prove that her company was legit and that the Wall Street Journal piece was not true, which of course it was true, she went on the most legitimate news program, which is Mad Money, hosted by Jim Cramer. So that tells you all you need to know about Elizabeth Holmes. And I agree. I think the inventor is pretty fascinating. It's also horrifying. I mean, there's this whole segment about these people having to go to Walgreens to get their blood drawn, which is just a horror movie unto itself. Have you been in a Walgreens recently? Can you imagine having blood drawn there?
Oh, I got a flu shot there. Is that a problem?
Especially when you go in expecting them to prick your finger and they say, oh, we can't do that. We got to take the blood out. which is the reason why people went to this in the first place,
right,
because they were afraid.
Exactly.
To have blood
draw. And the pharmacy techs weren't prepared for it. So there's a lot there. I do think that there is something of a journalistic challenge and a filmmaking challenge, I suppose, just inherent in this material, because Elizabeth Holmes is such an enigma, and deliberately so. That's how she presents herself. So she never really comes through, but that's because she's deliberately withholding people. And so there is kind of this dead-eyed sociopath at the center of this movie, and so therefore it's kind of up to everybody around her to bring
this
to life.
Yeah, she's the quintessential narcissist. I mean, today, now that she's been indicted on federal charges, she still is pitching these ideas just like Billy McFarlane was in the Fyre Festival.
And
so
people will probably pick up on them because billionaires never learn, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, that comes back to that whole aspect I was talking about it, dreams. She named her machine the Edison after Thomas Edison, and the whole point is he said he never failed because he'd make 10,000 mistakes, but no big deal because ultimately he would succeed.
None were failures.
Right, and
she quoted Yoda, too, so.
Right.
That was enshrined on her wall
in her
office.
But her real hero was Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you go back and look at the career of Steve Jobs, one of the big things is here's a guy in his garage. He's dreaming big. He's not going to make it. And he did. And he did. It changed the world in so many ways.
And
so,
like both of those people, both Edison and Jobs famously stole ideas from other people
exactly.
and passed them off as their own. So I guess she's on the right track in that respect.
But it's interesting that what Mary Pat talks about is if she had been less attractive, if she had been a male, would she have attracted as much attention from the likes of Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, and a number of other venture capitalists to get this thing going?
If you look at Silicon Valley, the HBO series, because that contains a lot of wisdom, the parody that it is, I think the answer to that would be definitely not. Mm-hmm. I can't say what happens in the real world. I think that there were some people in The Inventor who come off looking really good. Of course, Tyler Shultz, who had
Shultz's grandson.
Right, who was working for the company and caught on pretty early that there was a problem.
And he had a lot to lose.
Right.
Blew the whistle anyway.
Right,
in fact,
exactly.
They did lose maybe $500,000, his parents did, because of the legal fees and when Theranos went after him.
And now I have to say somebody who does not come off looking very well is David Boyce. And as we know, he's a high-profile litigator, represented Al Gore, was also one of the moving forces against Prop 8 in California. So he's done what some people would perceive as some good things. And he presents as the typical hired gun, rabid, zealous advocate for his client. But he helped perpetuate this fraud, and he helped also, in my opinion at least, he helped deter people from coming forward and whistleblowing because of the threats of litigation that his firm constantly engaged in.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Mary Pat. We've talked about the content of The Inventor, but going back to the style of it, I mean, this is kind of Gibney's house style, these glossy drone shots, this kind of sense of impending doom that hangs over everything. I mean, it looks and moves very similarly to the Scientology film that he made, Going Queer. It's not my favorite filmmaking style. I much prefer, ironically enough, I much prefer
Errol Morris.
But I do think that this is very much we're seeing. I didn't know about the 2020 piece, so I'm going to have to check that out. And we should say that, like Going Clear, this is an HBO production.
Right.
So if you have HBO, you can stream it, which is how we all saw it.
Well, and I do have to say I'm going to give a shout out to journalists, as Nathan did. But since both of you are in that biz, I mean, really, I think the fact that Carreau from the
Wall Street Journal
was willing to pursue this, despite all of the high-profile names involved, I give him, as you pointed out, a lot of credit.
That's right. And that was The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at The Hummingbird Project and The Beach Bum. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Alex Gibney's documentary, The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. Let's now move to a couple of other dreamer studies, both narrative efforts, the first being The Hummingbird Project, and the second aptly titled The Beach Bum. Let's begin with finance. Like Elizabeth Holmes, Billy McFarlane, and other Steve Jobs wannabes, Vincent Zaleski, played by Jesse Eisenberg, has a dream. If he can build a fiber optic cable from Kansas City to New Jersey, he believes that he can gain a millisecond advantage over other algorithmic traders, which, underneath all the stock exchange jargon, could mean millions and millions of dollars in profit. So he enlists the talents of his cousin, Anton, played by a virtually unrecognizable Alexander Skarsgård, whose genius is countered by his emotional fragility, and with the help of a too trusting venture capitalist, imagine such a thing, embarks on a gigantic construction project that slowly begins to unravel when his and Anton's former boss, Eva, played by Salma Hayek, learns what they're doing. Ultimately, like a classic MacGuffin, the financial stuff is just there to offer a lesson about what really counts in life, the simple act of watching raindrops drizzle through a forest.
Yeah, and there's lots of imagery like that throughout the Hummingbird Project, as if they're trying to ironically juxtapose the high-tech financial trade with the slowing it down a bit and taking in nature. There's this whole conversation between Eisenberg and Amish community where they want to drill underneath the Amish community's farm. All of that was a little bit heavy-handed to me. This imagery all throughout it, like they're drilling into the earth and that's juxtaposed with Jesse Eisenberg getting a tube stuck down his throat in a doctor's office, or there's this whole running theme with tennis balls hitting nets and not making it all the way over. And none of that really worked for me. Also, you know who really didn't work for me was Alexander Skarsgård.
Oh, seriously?
I thought his performance was so mannered. I could see everything that he was doing. He's much prettier in regular life than he is in this movie, and it just seemed like too much for me. I thought Eisenberg was fine. He's kind of doing his own thing. But for the most part, I actually enjoyed The Hummingbird Project. It's an unusual film about something I had no idea even existed. You know, this whole idea that they're putting so much money and effort into something that amounts to nanoseconds. And my
apparently, you didn't get the market, the vagaries of the market.
I don't understand the stock market at all. I even had a friend that worked on Wall Street, and he once tried to explain it to me like in big short terms, and I couldn't follow.
Your eyes glazed over.
I couldn't understand a single thing he said. My favorite scene in The Hummingbird Project is one of the slower scenes, though, because this movie is kind of structured like a thriller in a way. It felt like Margin Call, that J.C. Chandor film. But there's a scene where Anton, the Skarsgård character, is in a bar, and they're in this almost like comically empty resort, which is another one of the movie's kind of obvious visual themes. And he's talking with a bartender, and she kind of asks him to explain it, dumb it down for me and explain it. And he brings up the scenario about trading stocks into a lemon farm in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. And the bartender says to him, well, what about the lemon farmers in this situation? And he says, well, they're irrelevant in this equation. And she says, how can they be irrelevant? It's their livelihoods. And he said, oh, I've never really thought about that before. And to me, that said more about who these characters were than all of this other stuff that was going on. So I think this is an unusual film because it's like a thriller, like I said, but it has broad comic elements in it too. I never really thought it nailed the tone completely, but I was involved in it, even though I didn't quite understand everything that they were talking about at any given moment.
It makes it work, though, or why.
Yeah.
And I guess I was put off more by the Selma Hayek character. I mean, maybe she was real and realistic because she is the boss who now ends up being the competitor for trying to bring new technology to increase these travel times for information from Kansas City to New York. So I was a little bit put off by her performance. I really like Michael Mando, who some of you might recognize from Better Call Saul and maybe from some other places. But I want to ask, why is it this has a similar theme to The Inventor
or
The Dropout?
Absolutely.
And why do we have a different emotional response to the Jesse Eisenberg character? Is it just because he becomes ill? I mean, he bamboozled fewer and fewer people than did Elizabeth Theranos.
I don't think my thing is, in The Hummingbird Project, I don't think he intentionally bamboozled anybody. I think he had an idea and it might have worked. At least I think the movie tries to make the point that it might have worked. It just simply doesn't. He can't get it to go. And she is a real life character.
Well, and also she was risking people's lives, and this involved people's money. So,
But you could argue that the two things are inextricably linked. He's also a human character, whereas Elizabeth Holmes, even though she's the real person in this scenario, feels
like a cyborg.
And that's the height of irony. The point I wanted to make was that For the first half hour, 40 minutes of this film, I was cringing in my seat. First of all, I just had to go, okay, I'm going to go with this, all this whole point about milliseconds and algorithms and everything. I don't get it, but it's going to a point. But there's this whole thing of risk, and it was just driving me crazy. And then about 40 minutes, then the movie began to change. And then I got really involved in it. And I actually liked Alexander Sarsgaard. He is so different from he's been in any other movie. And we haven't even seen this aftermath. It's opening, I guess, today, Friday,
yeah.
That he plays a romantic lead, I guess. And I remember him most for the HBO series Generation Kill years ago. I mean, he's a terrific actor. And he's virtually unrecognizable in this movie.
He's just trying so hard to be unrecognizable that it, I don't know.
Well, I thought he captured the life of a guy on the spectrum.
He's good well. In other things.
And that was the Hummingbird Project. Let's close with the Beach Bum. It's hard to determine just who is the bigger dreamer, the character that Matthew McConaughey plays in the film written and directed by Harmony Korine, or Korine himself, who clearly wants us to believe that a man wasted on drink, drugs, sex, and most of all, his besotted vision of himself can still pen the great American novel, or great American poem, or great American something, whatever. In any event, McConaughey plays Moondog, a regular of Key West, Florida, the kind of costume character who, yes, drinks and smokes and has sex way past Hugh Hefner excess, and yet, when a serious incident occurs, is obligated to clean up his act well enough to fulfill a contract. Whether he does or can matters little, because at least for me, watching Moondog drift off into the Atlantic with his outsized ego in tow couldn't come fast enough.
Yeah, this movie is like if a Jimmy Buffett song threw up on one of those blacklight fabric posters with marijuana leaves all over them. And it's about as much fun as cleaning up that mess would be. This is a movie, like, on paper, the elements of the Beach Bum sound like they'd be really fun in a chaotic sort of way. You have Snoop Dogg playing a character named Lingerie. You have Isla Fisher doing a Bernadette Peters impression, essentially. Mm-hmm. You have Jonah Hill coming in and doing a Blanche DuBois routine.
I have no idea what he was doing.
Zac Efron shows up and has really no, he doesn't matter to
the
plot
tattoos,
at all.
Though.
And he's got this weird facial hair. And then Martin Lawrence shows up and gets attacked by sharks. And it's so boring, and I detested this movie. I hated it. I hate Harmony Korine for having made it. I hated Moondog. At the end of the movie, he burns a bunch of cash and blows up his own boat. Spoiler alert. And I wanted him to perish in the explosion. I hated this guy, and spending time with him was torturous. And the fact that the movie thinks that we're supposed to like him and warm up to him, and that all the people around him are like, oh, that's just Moondog over there. That's just what he does. No, I don't think so. He's a terrible character, and I hated this
movie. Of course, you could say that it was ideal casting.
I didn't like it very much either.
Okay, good to know. I think you could say it was ideal casting because we
for still better or worse, yes.
Remember Matthew McConaughey having the police come to his place when he was nude playing the bongos.
But at least
many years
he had the decency to do it in his own house and not involve a bunch of other people and everyone in Key West.
Yeah, and the character
he
played in Dazed and Confused that which really launched his career was at least understandable and lovable in a very kind of
and Richard Linklater had an attitude about that character, and Harmony Korine seems to like this guy. And
Harmony needs to go back to kids. Right.
Harmony needs to stop making
classic movies.
He does.
Before go away.
Before we that was the Beach Bum. Before we quit, Mary Pat, don't you have something to say about an event that's coming up, the Magic Land?
Yes, I'm very excited to bring to the attention of our listeners that there will be two screenings next week at the Magic Lantern of award-winning filmmaker Matt McCormick's documentaries. He recently moved to Spokane to take a professorship at Gonzaga University. And on Tuesday night at 7 p.m., there's a screening of his documentary, The Great Northwest, that chronicles the adventures of women who went on a road trip 50 years ago. Then Wednesday at 7 p.m., a personal story is going to be showcased, Buzz 1-4, about the B-52 bomber that crashed 90 miles from Washington, D.C., and the filmmaker has a personal connection because his grandfather was the pilot of that particular plane. So 7 p.m. next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Magic Lantern, be there.
And that's all for this episode of Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discuss the HBO documentary The Inventor, out for Blood in Silicon Valley, The Hummingbird Project, and The Beach Bum. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tevenin for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. And we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll continue our exploration of 21st century cinema. Until then, remember these words from the late Ray Charles. Dreams, if they're any good, are always a little bit crazy. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.